In this episode, I talk with Elsa Sinclair of Taming Wild. I invited her on this podcast to discuss her opinions on pressure, escalating pressure, and how it relates to freedom. She offered a really unique and nuanced opinion about pressure and how it fits into her freedom-based techniques. I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation. So here we go, episode 244, Elsa Sinclair, Pressure and Freedom. Hi, I'm Karen Rolfe, and welcome to Horse Training in Harmony. This podcast is about you making progress with your horse in a way that you both can love. It's about learning how to move and be in harmony. Because yes, you really can develop a horse to be both athletic and happy. When we show up as our best selves for our horses will show up for us. So let's get started. Elsa, welcome to the pod. I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here with you. It's always great to have a good conversation about all the things we love and all the horses that inspire us.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, you're someone who has just been in my awareness for a long time, and I'm sort of amazed at how I haven't connected with you more, and so I apologize for it being just now that we're having you as a guest here. I've been really impressed by what you do and, you know, the Taming Wild videos. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation because I decided to actually reach out and have you here based on a video that you had put on social media with your tea time talks. And it was about pressure. And I thought, well, this is interesting, about escalating pressure. And I was like, wow, what an interesting person to tackle that subject. And so I was like, ooh, how is she going to do this? And that's why I'm like, oh, I've got to continue this conversation. So we're going to get into that topic of pressure. But, you know, I think, like I said, what was interesting is in the context of who you are and what you do and doing, you know, freedom-based training. And so I just thought that was so interesting because of your sort of what I would say lack of escalating pressure. But now I just learned a new way of looking at pressure. But so anyway, I before we get into that, I'd love to, and this will be where I let you have a chance to talk. But if you could describe a little bit more about who you are and what you do and what that freedom-based training means and yeah.
Absolutely. I am so in love with the work I get to do with horses. And I swear it gets better every year, Karen. It's so wonderful to be on a path that feels like it increases in the joy that it brings me. So sharing it with other people is exciting. And I do think that I have a slightly alternative view on it. I say that this is the way that I wanted to work with horses when I was a child. And I couldn't find anyone who could fill that need. And I worked with many, many different trainers, and all of them filled parts of my needs. But there was still something lacking. And I couldn't really describe what it was because I was too young and too inexperienced. And I really had to spend a lot of time learning what other people had to offer. But eventually, I came around to the place where I created the method of training horses that I was really looking for my whole life. And this is the idea that we're training horses in a way that they would voluntarily sign up for. If there was no fence holding them close to you, there was no rope holding them close to you, and you didn't have control of their food resources, what's left? And this became sort of an obsession of mine. And then I ended up filming the movie with Myrna, where I actually dove into the project to see if it was possible. And there was a part of me that thought, maybe it's just an experiment that'll never work. And so I set myself a limit of a year, where I just had a year to spend with her as a friend and to exercise these theories I had that were really unproven at that point. And she was a 4-year-old Mustang that had grown up in the wild, and she was basically, I thought, enough of an adult to know what she liked and what she didn't like. And I made sure that, food was available in her paddock, but I wasn't the one to be bringing it to her, and that she had the freedom to walk away. My job was to frame training in such a way that she would sign up for it. And that was sort of the beginning of it in 2011. And then over the years, I would say I'm still doing the same things that I did with Myrna that first year, but I can explain them so much better now than I could in 2011. 2011 was very much by the seat of my pants, just trying the theories out. And I'm a little bit embarrassed how often Myrna had to walk away from and be like, no, that one doesn't fit. And I'd be like, all right, back to the drawing board. If she says no to that, what will she say yes to do? How do I break it down in a way that she will voluntarily say yes to developing skills together? And is it possible that we could get to the point where we actually ride? The end of the project was far more successful, actually, than I thought it would be. And then it sort of shaped the rest of my life from here on out. And I get to explore it every day with horses now, whether I'm teaching clinics or my online course or making videos for my Patreon group or just living in my own herd with my current projects. And there's nothing I love more, Karen. I love this so much. And I pull everything I can from other trainers. I think that there's a lot of brilliant horse trainers in the world, and I will take any idea I can find and try and figure out, well, how would I break that idea down enough that a horse would voluntarily sign on to play with it with me?
It's very, very cool, and you're very much an artist in how you train. And something I tell students all the time is like you're allowed to have the relationship you want with your horse. And it was so clear that you had this feeling of how you wanted your relationship to be with the horse, and you had to figure out a way that blended with that. And how lucky are all of us, because you now can explain it. Right. So sometimes that magic happens, alone in the bushes, and it's these magical moments and it doesn't get shared. So that's very cool. And I wanted to give a, for anybody who hasn't seen the movie Taming Wild, or both of them, because there's one in Costa Rica too, I really recommend it, because you're literally, I mean, I thought it was interesting that you gave her food, but you didn't bring it, right? Because sometimes that feels like the obvious, like, look at me, I'm come bearing gifts, and we know that that can work too. But that sort of, can it really be on the relationship and the interaction? So no food, no delivering the food, no food rewards, no ropes, no halters, no sticks, no nothing. I mean, we have arms, right, that can touch,
Yes.
and fingers that can touch. So, she's not hovercrafting over them using mind melding techniques. Or are you?
I'm
So I just wanted
not.
to give people the picture. It's a pure like interaction, reading the interaction, responding. And it's just really, really, I'm glad there's people like you out there that will take that idea all that way and try to do it in its most pure form, so that then others of us can use parts of that.
Exactly. And that's what I find I really can contribute to the horse world is not that everybody wants to do things in the pure form, but a lot of people can take a part of it or a piece of it that's really useful to them. And so when I say this is the way I've learned how to work with horses in a way they will voluntarily sign up for, you can still do that with your bridle on. You can still do that when you're delivering the food. You can still do that with all of the benefits of your tools. And tools have a beauty and a place in the world. I'm going to use the tools that are my hands and my arms and my physical body. And I'm not really looking at it from the spiritual energy side of it. I'm actually looking at it from the very nuts and bolts physical interaction of it, because that's the part I really, really enjoy. I'm sure there is a spiritual component of that. We are all things.
It can't, nothing cannot be in the energetic form also. But and this is where, it would be really easy for a different person to do what you just did and be very righteous and very guru-y and very, like, you have such a confidence without the ego. And that's
Yeah.
probably why your technique works with the horses, that they're picking up on that. But, because in what I do, and I do now very blended, I feel like the every year, what I do gets more simplified and more complicated, because it's like
It's
sometimes I
both.
don't know what the step one, two, and three is, because I'm feeling the moment for that horse in this moment with this thing that I'm doing. But the moments that I've had with my horse that I go, oh my gosh, I want to repeat that. Whether it's at liberty, just out in the, being with my horses in the barn, or it's wearing a bridle in collection and something very refined and complicated, the moments I love the most are when the horse is joining me with it and it's in lightness, and I go home feeling like, oh my God, it was like I just thought it and they were like signed up, they were there. So, like I said, it's independent of the tools. We can use our tools to bring the clarity and the let's be together and to have that dance partner connection, or anyway, so we're already getting right into the
Yeah.
topic, right? Is
It's
there
such
anything
a
else?
good topic. Yeah,
I
it's such
know.
a good topic.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to, and I'm going to ask you about the Costa Rica thing in a second, because that's worth sharing. I wanted people to really feel who you are, so when we start talking about pressure, they really appreciate where you're coming from in this conversation. There's this twofold goal for my podcast. One is the techniques, and the other is the conversation and the ability to get above ourselves and just look, hey, here's the stuff that cause and effect, works. This is,
Yeah.
I do this, and then I got this result, and this is what I wanted it to feel like, which I think the world, needs more practice.
Yeah.
Doing
Yeah.
and doing and hearing, I guess.
I also think that there's so many roads to Rome. I mean, there's so many different ways you can do one thing, get this result, and get that feeling. And not every path is for every person. So being able to put out our direction that has really worked for us means that there's somebody out there in the world that's going to go, oh, that resonates. Oh, that would work for me. And my path is not for everybody, but parts of it may be really, really helpful for a lot of people. And I got to put it out there for it to be able to help them
Yeah,
if
that's
they so
awesome.
choose.
So can you talk a little bit about what the Taming Wild Pura Vida it was, which is also
Yeah.
like, dang, girl.
So, Pura Vida turned out to be a much bigger adventure than I anticipated. I worked with Andrea Waite, and we rescued two horses, and we put into training the ideas that I'd done in freedom, but not in freedom. So, people had asked me, they said, this is all well and good what you've done with this Mustang. The beautiful first movie, it was great, but could we speed this up in any way? Like, that's a lot of time. The first movie was literally 3 to 6 hours a day, 5 days a week for a year with one horse. That's an unreasonable amount of time for most people to spend. And so the question that came up a lot is there any way you can sort of speed up these theories and get a result in that training in a quicker amount of time? And so I put a lot of thought of it, and I thought, if we included more travel, seeing the world in different ways, experiencing different climates, experiencing life together, potentially the freedom-based training ideas would then become faster. So Andrea and Waitie and I set up this idea where we rescued two horses that people didn't want anymore. And we decided we were going to train them on the go as we crossed Costa Rica from the West Coast to the East Coast. There is a trail, the Camino de Costa Rica, and it's not designed for horses. So we had to hire a guide who was able to get us around areas that horses couldn't go, like across train trestles, with big wide gaps and, trails that just were not designed for horses. So we had to do some detours to get across the country. But the idea was if we walk all day, then in the morning and in the evenings, could we do a little bit free of freedom-based training? Could we use these ideas of building a collaborative relationship with a horse, helping them use their sensory system more than their physical system, helping them become more cooperative? And would it work faster because we spent all day together. We started at sea level, we went up very high in elevation as we crossed the middle of the country, and then we ended up back at sea level. So we experienced a lot of different temperatures, a lot of different weathers, a lot of different towns, a lot of different countryside. And the answer was again better than I ever expected.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really cool because you really put a purpose and a direction to it. You either got to your destination or you didn't, but in the most horse-like way, traveling, covering the miles on a trail, going somewhere is so much more like what a horse can understand than going in circles in an arena. So I think that's really it's a pretty smart plan to try to test it. That makes a lot of sense. You didn't go, well, let's go in an arena and it's like, let's do a horse-like thing, let's travel. And you really were on that journey together, and I'm sure there's times that it felt like they were keeping you safe and times that it felt like they felt that you were keeping them safe. And there's some trails that I'm like, I don't think I'm it looks great, but I'm glad I wasn't there. I don't do well in the wet and the cold and slippery and oh my goodness. That's
Both
pretty.
Andrea and I said if we had known ahead of time how hard that trek was going to be, we probably would not have asked a horse to do it. It's
Wow.
one thing to take your own body over that kind of terrain, but to ask a horse that didn't necessarily sign up for it to do that was not something we would have necessarily done. Once we were in the middle of it, forward was the only way out. So, when you've hiked 7.5 hours in, and there's no roads, no people, no cars, no rescue helicopters, and you realize you've got another 9.5 hours out. Well, you might as well just keep going forward. It's 7.5 hours back or 9.5 hours out. At this point, you're in the middle of it. Just keep going.
So so now there is a halter and there is like a path you need to stay on. So there's a little bit of not as much freedom as before. Like how did you, 'cause there's like that a beautiful little bridging moment, like, okay, I've got the halter on, but how did you still keep the principles of the more freedom-based training in that moment?
So actually, I was forced into it. We got my horse from the auction, and he was pretty young, actually. And he was a little quarter horse, and Andrea won the bid, and she got him. And the old owners came up to her and they said, "Congratulations on your new horse. Please never, ever try and ride him."
Oh
And
my
so she
goodness.
called me up and she said, "Oh, Elsa, I think I bought the wrong horse. I'm so sorry." And I said, "No problem. I can walk all the way across the country. It's not a big deal. I'm happy to just lead him. I don't have to ride him." But as it was, he just hated people. He really wanted nothing to do with people, which meant he really didn't want to walk across the country. And I actually hit a point where my guide was very, very irritated with me. And he said, "We're not going to make it to camp by nightfall. We have to get to camp. The snakes come out at night. We cannot be out here on the trail when the snakes come out. You must make your horse go faster." And so I thought, okay, I have to go to dominance. I have to use more pressure. I've got to go to this escalating pressure. Unfortunately, Apollo was a horse that had unsuccessfully had pressure applied to him and then had people give up and put him back in the pasture, I assume. So when I tried to apply escalating pressure, it became clear very, very quickly that I would not be willing to put enough pressure on him to actually get a positive result. And so he forced me into thinking up a different solution, thinking outside the box, because I just wasn't willing to overpower his belief that he could resist. Because he could. He's bigger and stronger than I am. And I was not willing to put enough pressure on him to change his mind about that. So I ended up really having to think outside the box and think, how do we stimulate his sensory system so we develop a desire to go forward more than forcing him to go forward? So he thinks that going forward is his idea. How do we use the hearing, the seeing, the smelling, the feeling to make him want to travel down the trail faster. And I had to come up with some pretty interesting ways of convincing him that was a good idea. And it was hard work for me, and one of the best experiences I've had in my life, too, to be forced out of everything I knew into creating something. I wasn't sure it was going to work, but I had
He was the
no,
perfect horse for you in that moment, right?
no
Otherwise,
other options.
yeah. And I think, at the end of the day, that's exactly what you wanted, right? You're just like, oh, come on, just go. You're like, no. Horse is like, no. Feet and pace. So can you give an example of how you used his sensory,
So he would walk at a snail's pace, which was hilarious because our pack horse and the other horse were way up ahead, and he had no interest in keeping up with them, which was quite difficult for me. So I decided that while he walked at a snail's pace, he was willing to walk very, very slowly. I was going to have a dance party back and forth across the trail in front of him without pulling on the lead rope, just having a dance party. Now you have to remember, it's Costa Rica. It's so hot, you are sweating through all of your clothing, even at a slow walk. So here I am having a dance party and just absolutely blistering heat. And every time he would flick one ear forward in the direction of travel, I would stop my dance party and I would walk next to him. As slow as he wanted to go. I'm your partner, 100%. You want to go slow, I want to go slow too. And then I would start the dance party again. And pretty soon, it took him like one step of dancing for him to flick that ear forward and be like, no, you walk at my speed. And I was like, absolutely, I do walk at your speed. And then he was like, you know what? If I just keep my ears forward, she never starts the dance party again. It's way more fun if Elsa just walks at my speed. But what happened is, as he pricked his ears forward, he started listening and looking a little farther up the trail. He started his internal desire to get farther up the trail was motivated. And then he started to walk faster. And all I did was walk faster, just like him next to him. And he was like, yep, this is the plan. This is what we're doing. And Elsa agrees with me. So that's kind of how we sorted that out.
I love that. I love that. So just playing with where his attention is.
That's it.
Yeah, just put it in the direction you want to go. That's pretty clever. Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's not like you had to save your energy for anything. Oh
No.
my goodness.
So for a couple of days, I did do about twice as many miles as anybody else did in the group, but it was worth it. It was absolutely worth it.
That's such an awesome example. I'm trying to think of like, how could I use that? Oh my goodness. All right. So let's get into it. So this topic of escalating pressure, and first of all, I love that people are asking this question because in the horse world and in the traditional, I think well, it's not even traditional. In the horse world, we can all think of examples, unfortunately, of a scene where pressure was escalated way beyond anything that I would like to see or anybody would like to see. And we can picture the most horrible version of that. And, and yes, it can turn aggressive and violent and hurtful. But then, and so, yes, we need alternatives to that. But then that word pressure gets equated with abuse and torture and violence and all this thing. And I'm like, oh. And then people who already are heart-centered, especially heart-centered, are feeling worse and worse and worse about themselves. And then they want to do less and less, and they become frozen and stuck. And now the horse is just saying, what do you want me to do? And the person's feeling horrible and bad, and the horses pick up on the feeling, And yeah, and so I think there's so much room between pressure, which we'll talk about what is pressure, and harm, torture, abuse. Like there's a huge space. And I think number one, we need to take out the equal sign that pressure equals harm and abuse. And then we look at that range and we can figure out where we want to play on that range and what we can use at different times. So, yeah, I'd
That
love.
is my favorite thing to talk about. If we can put ideas on a spectrum, you get
Yes.
to choose what part of the spectrum is good for you. And I just think so many people, when one side of the spectrum is bad, they assume that the only alternative is to go to the complete other side of the spectrum because that must be good. And I just think life is a little more nuanced than that.
It is nuanced, and I think we can have our tendency. So we can say there's the people who like this end of the spectrum, and then there's the people who like this end of the spectrum. But there's a, and for sure, I think we all need our guardrails and our thresholds and our limits that we will not go past that. But I find within that, like I can go up and down that scale fast with. I intend to have like surgical precision, and it's very situational. Horse, what horse is it in? What moment is it? And these are the things I'm measuring. So we can have sort of, there's camps, people like to make tribes and make categories and put labels on things. But I think the interesting part and where life really happens is when we are sliding up and down this scale appropriately within the limits of what we deem not a not, where are the guardrails? What's too much?
And I think it's also incredibly valuable to think not only is what too much, but what is too little. There is a guardrail on either side that both horse and human get a vote in to some extent.
Yeah, and what's interesting when you say too little, because we can imagine, well, always little pressure is good. Yeah, if you want to observe a herd of wild horses over there, but I think what's interesting is what comes into play is what's our expectation. And where things get mismatched is like if we have an expectation and then we start to try to show that to the horse. We want it for me. I'd like to get to, success or decide, oh, I need to let go of that expectation. Right. So, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your, like, the, you had a really interesting take on escalating pressure and what that means and where freedom of choice comes in. And yeah, that there's always escalating pressure, which I was like, please. Please expand. I want to tell you about a brand new online course that I have, and I'm really excited about it. It's called How to Create a Happy Athlete, and it's based on the Happy Athlete Training Scale, which is a proven framework for ethical training that prioritizes your horse's well-being as you move up the levels. If you're the kind of person who loses sleep worrying about how to keep your horse happy and still advance, then you're not oversensitive. You're just really aware, and it means you care. And those are actually superpowers. The reality is you don't have to choose between results and your relationship. You just need to know how to prioritize. So it's about being strategic and having a blueprint to guide you. And that's what the How to Create a Happy Athlete course does. It gives you that framework, and then it shares key exercises. You'll get theory, demonstration, and you'll see me coaching riders through those exercises for their first time. It's really the ideal starting point for anyone of any discipline. It's actually my most concise, powerful, and least expensive online course. So if you've been wanting to learn more from me and you haven't been sure like exactly where to start, this is it. Now, if you're already studying dressage naturally, you're going to love adding this to your library. Because you're a listener of the pod, you get the special Friend of Dressage Naturally special crazy discount. You can save more than 50% on the course. So go to go.dressagenaturally.net/hats, as in HATS, Happy Athlete Training Scale. So again, that's go.dressagenaturally.net/HATS, and I'll leave the link in the show notes. So again, go.dressagenaturally.net/HATS. Use code HATS100 to get it for $97. All right, back to the pod.
So You can encourage me in any direction with you want in this topic, but I would say that generally speaking, I believe that all of us have emotional cycles. And one of the things I really teach people to do is observe their horse's emotional cycle. And no matter what your horse is doing, there will be an escalation of pressure they feel internally. So let's just take one of their simplest activities of eating grass. Okay, as they eat grass, they feel great. They love eating grass. As they eat grass, they're going to slowly fill up. And that is an escalation of pressure inside their system. And when the pressure gets high enough, they'll be like, you know what? I can't fit any more grass in my stomach. I got to stop. And people say, oh no, my horse will never stop eating grass. And I'm like, that's not actually true. At some point, they will say, I can't actually fit any more grass in my stomach. I have to stop. That is an example of natural escalating pressure within an environment. And so I believe that happens in every environment you are ever in. So if you stand next to your horse's left shoulder, that's great, but it has a time limit. And even if you don't intend to put any pressure on them, if you spent 24 hours standing at their left shoulder, eventually they'd be really irritated with you. They'd be like, that is enough of you standing at my left shoulder. I can't take it anymore. And so there is a sense of escalating pressure with absolutely every circumstance we enter. And it goes around a cycle where the pressure goes up and up and up, and then change is needed, and then it comes down, and then it goes up again. And so when we talk about putting pressure on a horse to ask for something, we ask them to go forward or backwards or left or right or up or down. Putting that pressure on them. If we want to use non-escalating pressure, we might put the pressure on and then just wait. But my argument is, even if you're just waiting, the pressure is still going up. At some point, they're going to have to do something. They might do something cooperative, they might do something defensive. I don't know, depends on your horse. But the pressure is still going up for them. Now, people say, oh no, my horse can just ignore it. I promise you, they can't ignore it forever. If they're alive, at some point they're going to do something about it. And there are certainly really, really shut down horses that have learned to ignore that escalating feeling. And then people are like, how do I get my horse out of shutdown? And that's a whole different discussion about whether you should or shouldn't do that. But the idea is that if they are alive, they're going to keep going through those emotional cycles. And there's no way around that. So if we acknowledge that, we then want to think about as their partner, do we let them feel the natural escalation of pressure because that's going to have the best outcome? Or do we increase the pressure so they can get through that part of the cycle as quickly as possible and into the decreasing pressure where they feel really easy again? And I think that is a question worth asking for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I this idea that we're always escalating the pressure, and I think that's really helpful to put out there, because when some people will say, I never use escalating pressure, it's like it really makes you look and go, really? Like, are you sure? Because an intention, just holding the intention, holds that, that pressure. So I think it's really important for people to realize that you might think you're not doing it, but maybe you are, and look at it. This happens with people who are really into the positive reinforcement. I only do positive reinforcement. No, you don't. Because every time you're not giving that treat, you're negatively punishing. So I mean, I think that the best way forward is to just look at what you're doing. And yes, you might prefer that method, but we need to be aware of the cause and effect. And that self-awareness is so important. So I was, that really got my intention when you described it that way. And I had this story. I got to go behind the scenes at a wild animal park, and they had said, it was really important to them that they never put pressure on their animals. And they did a lot of training so that they could do health stuff, training them to come in and injection, and they used positive reinforcement. And they really said, like, we don't want to ever put pressure on our animals. We don't want to stress them out. But they told this story about the giraffes, and in the giraffe barn, and they would all come in this barn, and then every morning, whatever, they'd open the door and the draft, and I'm not going to get the details perfect, but you'll get the essence. So the drafts all go out. And I guess there was some construction going on, and there was something across the aisleway, and it couldn't be moved. It was, I don't know if it was like a little thing, and they had a mat over it. There's something there from construction. And so they opened the door, and all the giraffes went, woo, and jumped over it and went out, except for one. And this one looked at it and stopped and was freaking out. It's like, I can't cross that. And so it stayed in the house. So now all the giraffes are out except this one. And now there's separation anxiety in this giraffe. And nobody wanted to put pressure on. And so this, it's going on for I don't remember how long, but long enough that it was like, what are we going to do about this? And then someone in the construction crew like accidentally dropped something. It made a big noise, scared the giraffe. Giraffe jumped out and was like, oh, I'm fine now. And it made everybody there go, I wonder if we should have done that sooner, because it was instead of it staying this anxiety. And so I think that to me was such
Such
a
a
clear picture.
perfect, yeah, perfect example.
Yeah.
Escalating pressure
And if
sometimes.
we're gonna have this expectation of what we'd like, then I think once we have that expectation, we need to figure out the easiest way to have them be successful in the way that we want them to. Or like sometimes my horses will be like, no. And I go, you know what? You're right. No. And I'll drop the expectation and go back and have a little think. But at that middle of I'm having this expectation, I'm starting to do something, and we're not getting there is, I think, the danger zone.
So one of the sort of basic premises of my training is so simple, everybody can use it. And that is, if it's getting better, keep doing it. If it's going to get worse, change something until it's going to get better. That's it.
I love that. I tell people, well, we'll try this and then we'll ask again. And you know what? It's either going to get better, worse, or stay the same.
And
Observe.
it's so simple, but sometimes we get so into our theories and our rights and our wrongs and our morality that we forget it can be that simple.
Yeah, so you also mentioned in this video that you did about it's like if you're the one applying the pressure, are you using your pressure for good or evil, I think was the quote. And I love thinking about that because well, the giraffe story again. Like if somebody had said, I'm gonna just scare that giraffe out of here, that would be using pressure for good, right? Because much better. In what I do, in trying to help horses find different ways of moving, some of that process in the beginning is changing their movement patterns, which initially feels really awkward and weird to them. But I will go through that pressure because I'm like, I know what's on the other side. You're going to so thank me for this. And so there's moments I'm like, come on, come on, come on, we got it. And they're like, ah, oh, see? They're like, hey, mom, I can move and breathe so much better. And then there's times that we humans apply pressure. You're talking about emotional cycles when we're frustrated. We just want to get them to do it. And, then we might want to check ourselves. So I think the amount of pressure and when we use it is, it's dependent on what we're trying to do, not
And
the.
so when I said that, are we using pressure for good or evil? A lot of that comes down to me is the end result is both the human and the horse are going to feel better about this? Or is it only the human that's going to feel better at the end of this?
Oh, that's a great. I love that.
And I want to work for a win-win situation. That's working for good in my mind. Working for evil is perhaps where we are using someone else for our own benefit. And I would avoid working that way. That's not my preference. I would never recommend that. But I don't think that means we have to avoid escalating pressure. Escalating pressure might be the best way for everybody to have a good outcome.
So interesting. So What does your life with horses look like now? Like, can you paint a picture? So I've seen the video of you starting your Mustang with nothing and doing these things. And I know you're teaching people and working probably with people who most of the time are wearing bridles and doing things. Like, can you paint a little picture of what it's like working with people? Do you work with people only without tools, or how are you helping people?
So when I'm with my own herd, I no longer have my mares. Both of them died a few years ago, unexpectedly. So I have a herd full of boys right now. I have one stallion and six geldings, and they all live together. And when I am home, I am constantly honing my craft with them. And that means that I work through a process that I do with all of my students. So I teach an online course twice a year. And in that online course, it's 18 weeks of education and as many Zoom calls with me as my students want. So I take a very small group so that I can really coach them through these ideas. Or not, that's up to them. They get to decide how much or how little they want to interact. But I'm doing all the same homework that they're doing. And so, what I do is I run them through a course of everything that I did in that first movie, but I can explain it a lot better now than I could then. And you always have a choice of five different levels of intensity that you can do the work. So, the first level is watching. Can you just watch your horses and actually notice sequence of events? Can you learn what you're looking at? Can you learn what you anticipate is going to happen next? Do you know your horse well enough to know what they're going to do next naturally? Once you know that, then it's time to start interacting. And this is what I call the affirming practice, which is proving to the horse that you actually know them well enough to know when their internal pressure is rising and they need a change. Can you sh do that? Can you do that change before they need it? Can you move your feet before they do? Then, when that pressure is coming down and they're feeling good and they're starting to use their sensory system better, can you show them that you see it and you stop and you are the same as them? And just affirming the behaviors that happen naturally. That's the second level. The third level is the support, which is can you cause them to use their sensory system better? Can you cause them to be curious and involved and interested? And then when they are, of course, you're going to mark it, reinforce it by being in harmony with them. The fourth level is you're going to be assertive, which means you start asking for things. So you're going to ask them for physical movements. Can they back up? Can they go forward? Can they go left? Can they go right? Can they go up? Can they go down? The problem with assertive is you can't just do it, you have to earn it. And so most of us humans do it too soon. And when we go to ask them, assertive means you are 100% sure it's going to go well. You're going to ask, you're going to find it doesn't go well, and you're going to slide into the persistent practice, which means if I can keep doing it and make it better, I should keep doing it. If I can't, I got to drop back, think about it, and do it better next time. And so those are our five levels of practice. And I do this with my herd every single day. I choose one of my horses to work on with each online course that I teach. And the rest of my horses kind of get 10 minutes a day. So the rest of the herd gets 10 minutes a day to sort of, they know me, we're still doing things. I trim their hooves, I take care of them. But I have one horse that I really focus on, and I switch horses every time I teach an online course.
Very interesting. That sounds
So,
really cool.
it's really fun. I love it more than anything I've ever done with horses. You can take this all the way to riding if you want to. The idea is to understand their emotional cycles and ask things at a time when it's easy for them to say yes. And if you ask things at a time when it's easy for them to say yes, and then you do it enough, it becomes a habit. And once it becomes a habit, then it's a skill you guys can count on.
Ask at a time, it's easy to say yes, is a great rule of thumb to remember. And I think that applies across everything. I mean, that's what I try to do too. It's the timing. I think so many, well, I think every training problem, and those are in air quotes, is simply that we asked them to do it, right? That's they have no problems until we come along and ask something that they're not ready to do. And so the more we can time when we're asking for what, I mean, that to me is it's those choices that have such a big effect. There's so many of the training problems are actually caused by someone asking the horse to do something at a time that they're not ready, and that there's smaller steps along the way. And that's one of the, when something's not working, one of the first things I ask myself is like, is today the day? Does it need to happen today? And really in life with horses, most of the time it's like, no, my horse does not need a perfect walk canter transition today. It just doesn't. Like, I can't think of a reason why it would. So to, I love that, like step back and be a little bit curious of, you know, if it's, again, beyond a threshold of too difficult, then it's too difficult. And if we have tools of control on the horse, it's really hard as a human not to use those. But to, for me to know, okay, I have these tools of communication with me. I need to be really clear of when am I using it for control. And that to me is like, I'm already gone. Like the times that I need to control things is really pretty minimal in my life. Like if you're crossing a highway, maybe, or you know, there's times you need to like, I'm just gonna control this. But most of the other time, if I feel like I have to resort to control and not communication, then I'm skipping steps, or I'm not really caring as much as I
And
would.
that's where using our pressure for good or evil comes in. We can
Yeah.
use pressure beautifully for the good of the horse. Like you were saying, when you're going to show them new movements that are going to make them feel better, but they don't believe you yet, pressure is a great way to say, just try it. I promise you're going to feel better if you try this. Now, in my training, I don't have that. I don't have that capability. So I've got to break it down much smaller, which really suits my personality. I really enjoy that. I don't think it's the only way to do things, but I find when students take a little time to learn that, then when they have the reins in their hands, they use the reins that much better because they know the horse that much better.
Love that. Yeah, and that was going to be my next question is, I'm sure you're working with people and teaching people who do have goals. Maybe they're competitive, or maybe they're just, you know, have a little more like, hey, I really want to achieve this. How does that go with them? Are they having success blending this together, like you said?
So I have students that show and they say, if I really take time to do 10 minutes of work in freedom before I tack up, I get better marks in the show. And just taking a little extra time to say, who is my horse today? Do I fully see them and understand them? Will lead to a better warm-up, which will lead to a better performance, which will lead to a better outcome. And so what I teach is just how well do you know your horse and can we work on that? Now, in my courses, I have all of my students in our group meetings. We only talk about the stuff we do in freedom. We only work on the freedom concepts. But the reason I do unlimited Zoom calls is because one-on-one, I will talk to students about anything. I will talk to them about their work in the bridle. I will talk to them about their dressage training. I will talk to them about their endurance racing. It doesn't matter to me. I will talk to you about anything one-on-one. But I only do that one-on-one because I find that once we start talking about adding pressure to a horse's life via tools, we really have to ask a lot of individual questions about that horse. The things that I will suggest for one person are completely inappropriate for another person. And so I don't do that in a group context. I only do that one-on-one.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think it's yeah, you're looking to minimize confusion and
So
be very specific.
the beauty about the work in freedom is horses won't let you get confused. They're really clear about it. Like if you get it wrong for them, they walk away or they push you, one or the other. And it may not happen the first day you work in freedom, but I find within 3 days of working in freedom, they go, oh, I get to have an opinion. Let me tell you all about it. And I find that the horses cut right through the confusion when there's no tools or food involved.
Which is a gift. Now, this is as a trainer, you know, or just even as a person with a horse. You know, I want to see the truth. I want to know. I want my horses to have what choice. Now, I want to know because then I know how to make things even better. But I just from the perspective of this living being, to have and it the way we keep horses, we have so much control over their lives, and their amount of choice that they have in their lives is minimized. So that's one of the things that I've tried to really maximize with my horses, like how much choice do they have in their life, in the circumstances that I can give them. And it's really, really fun to see them use that choice. And to go, like, sometimes I have my grooming stall, and sometimes the horse is like, I want to stand over here for grooming. I'm like, okay. Sometimes they'll start pawing at this mat I have that I fold up and put against the wall. And they're like, I want to be standing on the mat while we're grooming. I'm like, okay. I want to face the other direction. Okay. And there's so many things that in a normal barn where it's like they go from the stall to the cross ties, and this is the what, everything is efficient. That was an air quote, and there's so many ways that horses can experience choice, and I think that's really what's going to make a very trainable horse, because what is training of them looking what's around, making some decisions, trying to act different ways, and seeing what happens. If they don't get to practice that just in low stakes moments, right? Not when you're riding and your life depends on it or something, but just like, anyway. So I love that that's built into your training. Like I said, when they're free, you can see that much more obviously. And I know a lot of horses who've been in a life of control have to learn that they do have a choice. And sometimes I say, like, oh yeah, come to me, we do naughtiness training, because when horses start to have a choice, they're like, really? But I want to do this. I'm like, yeah, you could. And maybe they don't stand there like little rocks, but their hearts come out and their personality comes out. And then there's, like you said, with that horse that started looking forward, now there's something to play with, there's something to interact with. I think, yeah. So I love that. I think anytime we train where we get to see what our horse is really thinking is a good thing, although it can be quite humbling and take a little more time, like you said.
So I find that once we start really looking at what the horse, what their opinion is, what their feelings are, what they would choose if they could choose, a lot of our training has to be about giving to them before we expect to receive back from them. And sometimes the level of giving that's required before we get to start receiving is more than people are comfortable with. And that's why I do encourage people, look, we can put some parameters around this where when in freedom, we're really interested in their point of view. And also, we can put the halter or the bridle on and say, now is the time. My life depends on you taking care of me. We're going to go out on the trail. We're going to cross some difficult terrain. And I actually need you to just do what I tell you. And it is absolutely fine, I think, to have those different sides. I think that horses adapt beautifully and they understand when they have the freedom of choice and when they don't.
I love that. I love that it can flow like that, and that you're teaching that, and that, yeah, I think what you share is an amazing tool and awareness and way of looking at things. And just, I can see how even experiencing that in small, seemingly small little moments of your horse, like feeling that, can just open up all these possibilities to when you're even riding with a bridle in something refined. It's like that making it easier for them to say yes, looking for what, how are they gonna offer it more freely? What can I do to find that? Is really, really cool. So awesome.
It's so much fun. And I find that it just every year that I do this, I get more doors opening in my brain where I go, ah, oh, I've been doing that for 15 years, but now I understand it better. And it's just so exciting every time that happens.
Very, very cool. Is there anything else that you'd, I mean, you've shared so much. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we wrap this up?
I think that the biggest thing that I want to share is I'm obsessed with freedom. I'm obsessed with freedom of choice. And that goes for humans and horses. Now, the way I do it is I want both the human and the horse to feel like they have so many good choices for cooperation. Why wouldn't we choose the good ones? We're not going to choose the bad choices of defensiveness and lack of cooperation if we have enough good choices to choose from. I think that's true for all herd animals. We're herd animals. We want responses from each other. And if we can get good responses from each other, we want to do more with each other. And the way I go about this is prioritizing the sensory system over the mental system or the physical system. So the sensory system is they're hearing, they're seeing, they're smelling, they're feeling, and a little bit they're tasting, but I don't work with that so much. The idea is their sensory system really develops their awareness of all the good choices they could make. Then from there, we can build the mental system, which is they understand how sequences work. I have to do this to get that. And that's a really useful skill. And then from there, we can build the physical system, which is my body feels better when I move it like this. Now, I think you can start anywhere. You can start with the physical, you can start with the mental, but you're probably going to need some tools if you're going to start with the physical or the mental. If we start from the sensory perspective, that's where the horse really learns that they have the internal motivation to opt in. And so that's my focus. And I want people to know that I love ideas. I love trying to figure out why they're useful, when they're useful, how they're useful, and how do we craft the best path forward for every horse and every human. And I love being part of a community group of minds that are all working towards good things with horses and humans. And thank you so much, Karen, for inviting me into this conversation.
Well, it has been lovely to have you, and I think we're going to have to do this again. I'm sure there's going to be something that comes up. I go, wait, oh, Elsa, come back and talk about that some more. Yeah.
Anytime. My pleasure. Thank you, Karen.
Awesome. You're welcome. And yeah, you can find her at tamingwild.com.
Yes,
Elsa
that's the
Sinclair.
website. That'll give you all of the links, whether you want to join the Patreon group and get video inspiration or find the podcasts and have auditory inspiration or join an online course and take a deep dive with me. So that's where you find me. I travel 6 months out of the year. I'm in Europe twice a year. I'm in Australia once a year. I'm in New Zealand once a year. And so you guys can find me for a 4-day clinic anywhere.
Awesome. And I'll put the links in the show notes. And thank you again, Elsa.
If this episode resonates with you, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Training horses is a long game. The more you listen, the more pieces of the puzzle you'll have. To see all your learning resources, visit dressagenaturally.net. That's where you'll find free videos, online courses, my book. You can sign up for my Wednesday Wisdom email or even book a private consult. Most of all, remember, you got this. Never underestimate the possibility for things to improve in ways you cannot yet imagine. Till next time, love your horse, move in harmony, and enjoy the process.